Hello, I am Eli Adashi, Professor of Medical Science at Brown University and host of Medscape One-on-One. Joining me today is Senator Tom Coburn, a practicing family physician and a legislator, now in his second term as the junior senator from Oklahoma. A former three-term member of the House of Representatives, Dr. Coburn brings significant legislative experience to a national healthcare scene in great flux. As one of three physicians in the Senate, Dr. Coburn plays a key role in all matters healthcare. Welcome.
It's good to
just
be with you.
Wonderful to have you.
It's great to meet you.
Those of us who marvel at your multiple accomplishments cannot help but wonder if you are still seeing patients and, for that matter, delivering babies.
No, well, I stopped delivering babies summer before last. Had a real interesting last case, but I stopped just simply because I wasn't doing enough. And as you know, you start losing your skills. Still doing my continuing medical education and occasionally getting to see patients on a Monday morning.
That's terrific.
Yeah.
Last Thursday, you introduced a new bill that is designed to deal with the future financial solvency of Medicaid. Could you perhaps share with our viewers the central ingredients, the high points of that bill, and what drove you to propose this alternative in the mix that is currently on the Hill?
Well, myself, along with Senator Burns, Senator Chambliss, introduced a State Medicaid Flexibility Act, basically. And what it does is it says, it asks the question first, the reason we did it is, can we do Medicaid better? And should Medicaid be the same program in Ohio or New York as it is in Oklahoma? Are there the same demands? What are the variables that impact a patient in Medicaid? We know a lot of things about Medicaid. Number one, as we know, most of them have trouble getting access. We promise people coverage and we give them a Medicaid card and then they can't find anybody to care for them. That's the first problem. Number two is we know the outcomes aren't as good even when you adjust for the different social strata and conditions. So that's really not very much of a promise if we're going to have a federal state assisted Medicaid program. So the idea behind this is to transfer the decision making flexibility and capability of helping patients to the people who will care more about them than we do, which is their state, and allow that flexibility, allow that creativity to flourish in the individual states. For example, Arizona has a complete waiver. They have, and they're spending less than the average on Medicaid in the country, but they have everybody in Medicaid and HMO. There are positive things to that. There are negative things to that. But basically, everybody has a medical home. North Carolina has a waiver. They have a medical home for everybody on Medicaid, and they've made tremendous strides in terms of outcomes and prevention. So what we have is what we want to do is let the real experiment begin with other people's ideas and send that money to the state and say, okay, you know, we're not going to let you go down, but wherever you want to go forward in terms of caring for your patients that are impoverished or need help, then go your way.
I couldn't help but note that there was a provision in the bill that would compensate providers at an improved higher level. Is this driven by your earlier comment, namely that access to physicians has been limited?
Yeah, what we know, there's a couple of studies. We know right now primary care, whether it's internist, pediatrics, or family practice, 40% of them will not see a Medicaid patient. And it's not because they don't want to. It's basically, it's down to two reasons. One is they can't afford to anymore, given such a large percentage of their practice is Medicare. And number two is when patients are seen by specialists, only 35% of the specialists will see a Medicaid patient. So the whole idea is if you want to say we're going to help you, but then we're going to limit your ability to get there through an economic means, why don't we let the market kind of decide what's available and what's accessible in Oklahoma or Ohio or Virginia or wherever, but let's let those market rates determine that. And you know, our problem in healthcare, Dr. Adashi, is it costs too much. And what we also know is $1 out of $3 spent in healthcare isn't helping anybody. So when we're going to spend $2.6 trillion this year on healthcare and $850 billion isn't helping anybody, we ought to start thinking about how do we change the mix to where we have new ideas put into it and maybe more local control rather than centralized bureaucratic control from Washington. That bill also repeals the increased number of people going into Medicaid. You know, the original part of the Affordable Care Act said 16 million new people would go into Medicaid. It's now estimated to be 25 million. And I would just say, you know, that's a false promise that Washington can't keep. If you enroll 25 million new people in Medicaid, they're not going to be seen. Mm-hmm. They're going to have to go outside of Medicaid to get care.
I also noted what I think is an important exclusion you inserted, namely to forgo the application of some of these new regulations to dual eligibles and to disabled. Mm-hmm. What went into those considerations? What drove you to make those exclusions?
Well, one is they're a specialized class. Number two, that they're an expensive class. And if you're sending it to the states, what we do recommend or we give for an option is a managed care option for those individuals. We're in the states where they've had some experiments on this, they actually save a lot of money when they individualize the care rather than institutionalize the care for these individuals. So what we did is we didn't want to – we have a capped entitlement, which means we're going to control the amount of money that's going to be spent. We didn't want to cap the entitlement on that group of people. And we don't know enough yet about if you could do that, what would be a fair amount. We know in the other areas, but in these we don't. So for the dual eligibles, the very, very poor that are on Medicare, Medicaid, and for those that are disabled – and on Medicaid. What we said is, let's let the states experiment how best to handle that. But here's the money.
Let's move to Medicare for a moment. I understand you're in the midst of preparing new legislation that would address that institution's long-term solvency as well as perhaps operational characteristics. You are bringing to that table your experience with the Cost Reduction Commission and your recent involvement with the so-called Gang of Six. What, as you think about Medicare today, is your prescription, if you will? What general principles have you formulated in your own mind that would drive the bill that you are hopefully going to introduce?
Well, I think a couple of things are important. The first is to recognize Medicare as we know it today is an impossibility 5 years from now, just five. We do not have the money to keep the commitments under the present system 5 years from now. It won't be there. And to create an expectation that Medicare is going to be stable without changing it, it's just patently dishonest. There is no way we have the money to afford Medicare to continue as it is. So, what do we know about Medicare? We know there's at least $80 billion worth of fraud in it a year. Some of it physician, most of it not, but some of it is. the system's designed to be defrauded. Why do we see such a greater amount of fraud in Medicare than we do in private sector insurance? 1% versus 10%, 12%, 15%, 18%. Why is the differential? What do you need to do to change that? So that's one thing you would do. Number two is, how do you incentivize preventive care and disincentivize overutilization? Because we have a lot of that. How do you make it equitable in all parts of the plan so that a senior knows? As I've become a senior, one of the things I've recognized that I had seen in my patients for years is you think about your health more and you think about the future more. And one of the things that happens is, as a consequence of aging and how we focus on our health and our future, we're really vulnerable to pay out dollars that really don't buy us much back. We want that secure. We want everything over here tied up in terms of our health care. And so consequently, the American people are exposed to a significant amount of money, either through Medicare or through a supplemental insurance policy, but probably not in a positive way. So how do you tell a senior, here's the max exposure you have every year so you can quit worrying about it? You know, I'm convinced I did this with tons of my senior patients. I had them bring me their insurance program. And I said, well, let's just talk about this. You may have an untoward event, but you're paying $560 a month for this supplemental policy. Why don't you just take that money and put it in the bank? Because here's your exposure. And after 2 years, you're way ahead of the game. And you don't buy it. And I talked probably 85% of my patients out of supplemental insurance because they really get very poor value for what that is, unless they're really sick or really have chronic conditions.
You're referring
to
Medigap. Medigap,
supplemental policy for Medicare. So how do we make Medicare to where they, you know, if we have a government-run program, why do you have to buy another program to take care of what Medicare doesn't cover? So why don't we create the expectation that people know what it'll cover, they know what the max, so put a maximum exposure for every senior in this country annualized. So just some of those things. How do we incentivize prevention? How do we disincentivize overutilization? How do we make sure we don't overutilize certain services like home health care? You know, home health care is a wonderful benefit, but it's also markedly profitable for the agencies that are doing it. Same thing with hospice. How do we get that balance back? And so it goes back to what's wrong with healthcare. What's wrong with healthcare is it costs way too much first, but the reason it costs too much is because everybody thinks somebody else is paying the bill. And as long as we have that disconnect, we're going to have a difficult time ever controlling costs, whether it's in the private sector or in the public sector.
It seems reasonable to assume that there will be some cost reduction measures in the bill. What can you say or tell our viewers about the prospect of a revenue component as well in this plan, if any?
Well, we have, you know, there's no question our government has a revenue problem, part of it because the economy has not fully recovered. I don't think we have to go there. I think what we have to do is ring out. You know, if you go, I use this example. When people tell me American citizens aren't smart enough to buy their health care, I don't buy that. You know, I've delivered a lot of Amish babies. We have a large Amish community north of my hometown. They don't have insurance, but they're the best purchasers of health care I know because they want to know where every dollar's going. They want to know where they can get something done cheaper. They're questioning whether or not you certainly need to have it done. And so consequently, they buy their health care for about 40% less than everybody else. I mean, because they're great, avid consumers. That's what we need. I mean, as a professional, it really is good if my patient's questioning about why I need a test. And the other thing we need, which it refers to our profession, is we really need to be a whole lot more responsible with how we direct where money is spent. Because there is a finite amount of money in this country for health care, and we've reached the max. We're not going any higher, and so one or two or three things is going to happen for our seniors. it's going to get rationed if we don't change it to a better model, which means somebody besides you is going to be making the decision, you and your physician, about mm-hmm. what your health care is going to be. And we can't stay competitive worldwide, and we certainly can't afford a continued doubling or tripling of the inflation rate in healthcare compared to everything else. We just can't do it. So we have to figure out how best to do that. And I think reconnecting people with making the decision, trusting mm-hmm. that if it's in their own best interest mm-hmm. financially, mm-hmm. they'll make different choices.
On that note, sincere thanks to Senator Coburn and to you, our viewers, for joining Medscape One-on-One. Until next time, I am Eli Adashi.